Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, EEOC Pre-Suit Obligations and Attorney's Fees Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 22, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in CRST Van Expedited Inc. v. EEOC. In 2007, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission filed a sexual harassment suit against CRST Van Expedited on behalf of approximately 270 female employees. When a number failed to appear for depositions, however, the district court barred the EEOC from pursuing their claims as a discovery sanction. The remaining claims were dismissed on various other grounds, including 67 claims that the district court dismissed for failure of the EEOC to separately investigate, find a reasonable cause for, or attempt to conciliate them. In addition, the court awarded CRST some $4.46 million in attorney's fees and expenses, on the basis that the claims were frivolous, unreasonable, or without foundation. On appeal, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit affirmed the dismissal of all but two claims, vacated the award of fees and costs, and remanded the case. On remand, one of the remaining claims was withdrawn and the other settled. CRST renewed its petition for fees, costs, and expenses, and the district court again awarded it approximately $4.6 million. On a second appeal, the Eighth Circuit again reversed the award, finding that claims which had been dismissed for the EEOC's failure to meet pre-suit obligations could not serve as grounds for an award, and remanding for an individualized determination as to whether other claims were frivolous, unreasonable, or without foundation. The Supreme Court granted CRST's subsequent petition for certiorari on the following question: whether a dismissal of a Title VII case based on the EEOC's total failure to satisfy its pre-suit investigation, reasonable cause, and conciliation obligations, can form the basis of an attorney's fee award to the defendant under 42 U.S.C. 2000E5K. To discuss the case, we have Kenton J. Scarron, who is an associate at Jones Day. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Scarron.
The Supreme Court heard argument last Monday in CRST Van Expedited Inc. v. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The case involves whether the EEOC can be made to pay defendants' attorney fees under a provision of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 when it fails to satisfy its statutorily required investigation, reasonable cause, and conciliation obligations before bringing suit. Petitioner CRST is a family-owned long-haul trucking company. Its drivers operate in teams of two who take turns driving. This suit began in 2005 when a female CRST driver filed a discrimination charge with the EEOC, alleging that she was sexually harassed by two different male drivers. Title VII lets the EEOC sue on behalf of such employees, but under 42 U.S.C. 2000E-5, part of Title VII, before it can sue, the EEOC must investigate, make a reasonable cause determination, and attempt to resolve the charge informally through conciliation. Those rules are supposed to avoid litigation whenever possible. The EEOC went through those steps for the complaining employee's claim, and ultimately that investigation and other steps ended with an unsuccessful conciliation. At that point, the EEOC filed a single-count complaint on behalf of the individual employee and what it termed a class of similarly situated female employees. However, the EEOC did not actually purport to be proceeding under a class action or any similar device. It instead added individuals to the suit as discovery progressed. This led to the district court eventually ordering the EEOC to identify all individuals on whose behalf it was purporting to bring claims, in large part because of the court's concern that the EEOC was using discovery to hunt for new employees and claims. For instance, the EEOC named almost 200 of the total 270 individuals it eventually identified in the week just before the court's deadline. CRST deposed 154 of the claimants eventually. The remaining claimants were dismissed, most as a discovery sanction, because the EEOC failed to produce them for depositions. And by 2009, CRST moved successfully for summary judgment as to all but 67 of the 154 remaining claimants that it had deposed. CRST then moved to dismiss the 67 claimants who did not, who survived summary judgment based on the EEOC's failure to investigate, make a reasonable cause determination, and attempt to conciliate as required under Title VII. The EEOC, interestingly, conceded that it had not followed the law. It instead claimed that its investigation, reasonable cause determination, and conciliation for the initial complaining employee excused that failure because it had referenced a generic class of employees in its complaint. The district court rejected that argument as bootstrapping and in particularly biting language. It found that the record showed that EEOC had, quote, wholly abandoned its statutory duties. And as a result, it entered a judgment stating that the plaintiff, EEOC, takes nothing and the action is dismissed. At that point, Title VII's attorney fee provision came into play. That statute, 42 U.S.C. 2000E5K, authorizes a district court in its discretion to allow a prevailing party a reasonable attorney's fee. Now, the Supreme Court has interpreted that law to give prevailing plaintiffs attorney's fees in all but special circumstances, but it applies a higher standard to prevailing defendants under a case called Christiansburg Garment Company versus EEOC. And under Christiansburg, defendants have to show that the plaintiff's action was frivolous, unreasonable, or without foundation. The district court applied the Christiansburg standard and found that the EEOC's failure to follow its pre-suit obligations was unreasonable and awarded over $4 million in attorney's fees and expenses. The Eighth Circuit affirmed that dismissal of the 67 claims based on the failure to satisfy Title VII's pre-suit requirements, but it separately reversed another part of the court's judgment and therefore vacated the fee award without prejudice. And on remand, the parties eventually settled the last remaining claim and jointly moved to dismiss the case. CRST at that point renewed its petition for attorney's fees, and the district court again awarded over $4 million for the 67 claims on which the EEOC admittedly had failed to follow Title VII's pre-suit requirements. That led to the opinion presently under review at the Supreme Court. There, the Eighth Circuit again reversed the fee award, this time because it believed that CRST could only be a prevailing party under the fee statute if it won what it termed a ruling on the merits, and concluded that the dismissal for failure to satisfy pre-suit obligations was not that sort of merits determination. The Eighth Circuit also believed that CRST could not satisfy Christiansburg without such a judicial merits determination. At certiorari, both CRST and the EEOC focused on the Eighth Circuit's on-the-merits rule, which split from numerous other courts of appeals. CRST's opening brief also focused on that rule, explaining why the Eighth Circuit's ruling made no sense for defendants, based on the reasoning that, unlike plaintiffs, defendants only seek to make a case go away in any way possible in order to prevail as the fee statute requires, and that occurred when the district court in this case dismissed the claims of the 67 individuals on Title VII's pre-suit obligation grounds. And at argument, counsel for CRST essentially spent most of the time keeping the court's discussion procedurally grounded in the admittedly complex background of what actually occurred below, and that was primarily in response to questioning by Justice Ginsburg that seemed to be attempting to frame the case more favorably for the EEOC. Interestingly, in contrast with CRST's merits position, the government's merits position abandoned defending the Eighth Circuit's decision below. In an oral argument, Justices Alito and Breyer immediately forced the Solicitor General's office to admit right out of the gate that they had done so. And instead, the government presented a new argument based on a 2001 case, Buchanan Board and Care Home, Inc. versus West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources, and argued that CRST now was not a prevailing party because it had not secured what that case termed a judicially sanctioned change in the legal relationship of the parties. What that really boiled down to, as the oral argument made clear, was that the EEOC believed that even though it had lost and even though its claims were dismissed, it still thought that there was no change in the legal relationship of the parties, and that therefore CRST was not prevailing under the fee statute because EEOC could theoretically still bring a new unrelated suit alleging the same claims, which would presumably happen after the EEOC had fulfilled its pre-suit obligations for those 67 individuals it had not done so before. Now, that's possible in part because, as an aside, there's no statute of limitations on Title VII claims brought by the EEOC. There was also a secondary argument that the government advanced in its briefing and at oral argument, trying to claim that the 2009 district court's dismissal was not technically with prejudice because it didn't actually use the word prejudice. Now, while a switch in arguments is not unheard of at the Supreme Court, particularly in a situation like this one where the Solicitor General takes over primary responsibility for briefing from an executive agency, the court tends not to appreciate such switches because they cause confusion and because they force the court to address new arguments that have not really been vetted before by the lower courts. And not surprisingly, in light of that, the Solicitor General's office had trouble defending its new position throughout the argument. The Chief Justice, as well as Justices Breyer, Kennedy, and Alito, all seemed more inclined to adopt what Justice Breyer several times called a simple or common sense approach that a defendant who wins a suit has prevailed, with the propriety of a fee award being evaluated based on reasonableness or unreasonableness under Christiansburg, based on conduct in that suit. And there was a particularly telling moment that might have been key to the argument where Justice Kennedy clarified that the government's position was now that no matter how unreasonable the plaintiff has been and no matter how costly the litigation has been as a result of unreasonable conduct, and no matter how long a case takes, if the case is dismissed and the judge says that the plaintiff is barred from bringing the claim in a future in the suit, there would still be no fees. Kennedy asked whether that was, in fact, the government's position, and the government had to admit that Justice Kennedy was accurately summarizing that position and even said that in some cases that might have unappealing consequences. The Solicitor General's office had similar trouble in its attempt to characterize the fact of the 2009 dismissal as less than a dismissal of prejudice, and here Justice Breyer took the lead and several times referenced the district court's 2009 order, which stated that the EEOC takes nothing and the action is dismissed, which Breyer then went so far as to say at one point, they won, okay, so if they won, why isn't that the end of it? Now, it's always challenging to draw conclusions from an oral argument, but when you see that kind of questioning, particularly coming from Justices Breyer and Kennedy, who would presumably be necessary for the government to prevail in this case, that questioning suggests that even with the current eight-justice court, there may be five votes for reversing the Eighth Circuit's on the merits rule, as well as for finding that CRST was a prevailing party for purposes of Title VII's fee statute. And if the court were to go that way, the court technically could still decide whether the EEOC's actions were also frivolous, unreasonable, or without foundation under the Christiansburg standard. The district court opinions below here give a good amount of support for the argument that the EEOC's conduct was simply beyond the pale. However, because the Eighth Circuit only addressed that question in a fairly summary question that summary fashion that essentially depended on its on-the-merits analysis, and even though the parties briefed the issue, it was not their primary focus. As a result of that, the most likely outcome in this case seems to be, at this point, seems to be a determination that CRST prevailed with a remand for the Eighth Circuit to consider in more depth whether the Christiansburg standard was met.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.